This is Economics for Entrepreneurs, the podcast where we apply the principles of economics to help you make the best decisions for your life and business. Here's your host, Hunter Hastings.
Hi, Hunter Hastings here. One of our themes in Economics for Entrepreneurs is to highlight how emerging technologies augment the capacity of individual entrepreneurs and bring bigger dreams and bigger plans into reach for everyone. In the title of my most recent book, The Interconnected Individual, we referred to these augmenting technologies as a group as AI, as in artificial intelligence, platforms, apps, and global exchanges. Whatever you think about all the speculation about the future of AI, it is a tool for entrepreneurs right now. I've been told that 85% of the AI code that has been written is accessible on GitHub. That means that all entrepreneurs can think of it as a business tool and a creative tool. It's relevant, available, and it's usable right now. I hope to be able to explore some practical applications of AI. One of them is outbound sales and marketing, emails, phone calls, and sales-related social tasks. These are part of every entrepreneur's everyday business activities today. One place where AI is highly applicable is personalization. And personalization typically improves marketing and sales engagement and results. So this is one place where you can explore the use of AI to help your business. Today we're talking to Will Dinkle. He's a young CEO. He's already an AI veteran, though. Along with his co-founder, Brian Pertl, Will runs Nova.ai, a platform for outbound sales. Will has worked for a giant corporation and a mid-sized corporation before founding Nova.ai, so he has a good feel for the range of applications that AI can embrace. Will, welcome.
Happy to be here.
Our theme today is how any entrepreneur can use AI to make a business more intelligent. So we're trying to think about AI as the entrepreneur's friend to make it not intimidating, to maybe shed some light on how it's available for everyone. So I hope you can help with that today. Thinking about AI as a business tool for every business and how entrepreneurs can creatively find their ways to new levels of performance with AI. So I thought we might start with the way in which you first encountered artificial intelligence as a technology and as a business tool. And maybe you could tell us whether that was at Cal Poly or Harvard or Hewlett-Packard or Cloudflare or some of the other places that you've been. Just tell us a little bit about your individual journey.
Well, the first time I actually heard of AI was several years ago. And at the time, I never really thought this is something that I would be working in or doing. I thought it was very interesting. But a friend of mine, I guess this story starts about 2007. He was working at a company that did software for ports. Like the Port of Oakland, the Port of Long Beach, where these giant shipping containers go in and out. And I remember at the time he was telling me this story, this was 2007, that they'd had this, one of the big things they need to do is they need to read the labels and the numbers off these shipping containers. And he told me that in 2007, this new thing had come out, Mechanical Turk. And, previously they'd had this kind of computer vision that had tried to, figure out the vectors and read these things, but it was somewhat faulty. And he told me that it was actually cheaper to, take pictures, send them up to Mechanical Turk, pay somebody somewhere, a fraction of a penny, and have humans do this. And I thought at the time that was just so amazing. I think Mechanical Turk had just come out. The idea of having kind of the human in the loop, as they now call it, supplementing software algorithms is just so cool. And then that same friend, I was talking to him in about 2013, they were starting to, not only have people do this, but also, have those folks train, AI machine learning models. And so You know, after a certain amount of time, they could, with high accuracy, get this done even without the human in the loop. So, you know, the human could kind of transfer that knowledge and experience into the model. Just pretty mind blowing. And, you know, it kind of gives you a sense, you know, the fact that I thought, you know, a human in the loop in 2007 was amazing. Sometimes, you know, it's easy to ignore how much things have changed in the last few years, but it's really, truly been remarkable. Right.
So you started to explore AI. At what point did you start to identify a business track for yourself in that field? And maybe now's the time to tell us about Nova.ai, how you conceived it and how it began in the early days. We're big fans here of the customer as the driver of innovation, because they're always looking for better solutions to problems they can't solve. And I think Nova.ai links to that theme. So tell us a little bit about your business logic and how it's evolved.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think like many entrepreneurs, you know, long before the company came into existence, I saw the need. And for me, prior to starting Nova, I worked at a company called Cloudflare, where I was deeply involved in helping to launch their enterprise product, and with that, building out an enterprise sales team for the first time. And you know, one great thing about that experience and about the company is that we're very metrics driven. And so we would measure everything across the sales organization, each activity, each outcome, you know, do attribution, et cetera. And you know, one thing that we observed that was very stark is that the more personal and the more targeted that we could make each interaction with a potential customer, the higher the success rate, which, you know, is not profound in and of itself, but it was really a dramatic difference that we observed with really high personalization content, whether it be an email, you know, a phone call where, you know, you can lead with something very personal. But the other thing we saw is that is also very labor intensive. So, you know, the incremental cost of sending an email or a marketing newsletter is zero. You know, the cost of 15 minutes of somebody's time is, you know, several, if not, you know, tens of dollars. So, you know, that was kind of what sparked this. You know, we said, well, you know, you have this kind of manual labor model, and you have this software, pure software, but it's just really dumb automation. And we kind of thought, hey, look, you know, there's a lot of salespeople out there doing a lot of really similar things every day. How can we use some software to add some memory to this process? And it's a huge problem or opportunity for sales teams, because sales teams, you know, they're unique. They spend 94.2% of their budget on labor, and they're so mission critical to the company in terms of their success. So, you know, any efficiency gains there is hugely valuable.
So you mentioned that personalization showed a huge increase in yield and performance. Can you give us some dimensions of that? Just give our listeners a sense of how big that influence of personalization can be.
Yeah. So there's a lot of ways to measure it. In sales, you know, if you're going out and let's say you're a seller and you have a territory of, you know, maybe 2,000 people you want to sell to, you know, maybe 1,500 of them don't know who you are. You know, maybe 300 of them, you know, you've called them and they hung up on you, or you've wrote them emails and they, you know, marked them as spam. So you have, you know, relatively speaking, usually, for the typical inside rep who has that many accounts, you know, the biggest thing that you need to do is just get your foot in the door. And so personalization can be an amazing tool. You know, something that's personalized can yield as much as a 10 times higher. Let's take a personalized email, for example. It can yield almost, you know, up to 10 plus times higher likelihood of somebody, you know, taking notice and taking a meeting with you to learn about your product or service, relative to something that's just completely boilerplate. And you know, of course you could say, you know, why don't you send 10 times more because it's free, but you know, the reality is there's usually a finite set of target accounts, that a company goes after. So, Depending on the dynamics, it may be completely imperative to maximize that yield.
So can you give us an example of personalization so that we can turn it from a a kind of general noun to describe a category of work to a specific example without giving away any personal secrets of anybody? But what's a good example of personalization and how it works?
Yeah, well, I think of it like if I were to come up to you at a cocktail party, for example, Hunter. Obviously in that setting, you know, maybe somebody's introducing us and there's some information that comes from that. But imagine somebody telling me, hey, I'm going to introduce you to Hunter at this party. And then I go online and I scour and maybe I find some information about you. You know, maybe I find that, you're a big barbecue aficionado. And, you know, so I lead with something that relates to a shared interest in smoking meats. And I know that happens to be something that you are very interested in. So
you know me intimately, right?
Yeah. If you heard that, you'd be, oh my God, we gotta share some notes here. So
we've got something to talk about now.
And there's other things, I could compliment you on your work. I could, compliment you perhaps on, companies you've worked with and the working relationship. It can really cut across any dimension. Obviously you want to bring it back to the business need, which is the basis of the conversation in sales. But the big challenge and problem is just getting a hold of somebody in a way that's empathetic and gets their attention, gets them to give you that 30 seconds of their time.
That's wonderful. So we've explained a little bit about artificial intelligence. We've illustrated one application in personalization. Another term that comes up a lot, I don't think we've mentioned it so far, is machine learning. So can you talk a little bit about machine learning in layperson's language, how a regular person like me might get my head around that concept, and then how you've implemented that or utilized that at Nova.ai?
Yeah. So machine learning is this very broad umbrella that covers different technologies. And to me, when we think about machine learning, we think about it as it used to be that, in the world of automation, that software would do what you tell it to. If you see X, do Y. In the morning, send Hunter an email at 8 a.m. Check the clock every minute, send him an email at 8 a.m. Something like that. So machine learning, I think, is it's kind of refers to this new category, which is non-algorithmic, which, kind of accumulates data over time and uses that data to make better decisions. There's a few different specific use cases that fall under that umbrella. One big one is the regression, which is taking a set of inputs and a set of outputs and then being able to determine which inputs are most responsible for the output. And a good example of this is when you go on Netflix and you see those categories that they come up with for you. I was at my friend's house recently and in Netflix, their top category was British mid-century dramas with a strong female lead, which is kind of incredible category to come up with. But it was literally from, the regression, they looked at everything they watched and they found those are the most co-varying or most common themes and put together that category. And there's a lot of different types of things like that under the machine learning heading. But primarily when people say AI, what they're referring to is the neural net. And really, that's the system where it takes a set of inputs and, when it's first starting out, a human in the loop will, specify the output. So, we were to take a sentence that you're saying and, what is Hunter saying here? Oh, well, he's saying it's cold today. Here he's saying it's hot today. Here he's saying neither of those things. Then over time, you could give a sentence to the model. And then it could say for itself whether, you're saying it's cold or it's hot with relatively high, probability. So that's kind of the most commonly when people talk about AI or artificial intelligence, they're speaking specifically about the neural net technology.
Okay, great. Thanks. So we've got a number of terms and ideas that you've explained, AI and machine learning, and you've introduced the neural net. You started a business in this use of personalization and application of some of these technologies to help other businesses be more effective. So you're not in the technology business, you're in the service business. Can you talk about how the service you're providing to the marketplace has evolved, what you've learned from the marketplace feedback? We really like to emphasize listening to customers, learning from customers, applying that feedback, enjoying the feedback, and making use of it. Can you tell us a little bit about how that's worked for Nova.ai?
Yeah, absolutely. So historically, what the company has done is provide what we call instant personalization. So the ability to do research, come up with personalized tidbit sentences immediately. And that's been a very successful business for us. More recently, we've become focused on the more broad role of the seller. And in particular, what are the major time sucks just globally for a salesperson today? And we've started to work on a new problem space within that. So a little bit of background on that. The typical seller today, they're going to use something called the CRM, which most people are probably familiar with. But it's basically a digital version of a notebook for tracking conversations, people, deals, etc. And when these things first came out, the way you put data in them was very manual. You'd go log an activity and you'd type in, hey, I talked to John today and this is what he said. But today we're in a different world. There's all these different tools. There's, email tools, there's dialing tools, there's, website forms, and they're constantly just dumping data into the CRM. And that's great because it's very comprehensive, but these were built to be databases. They were not built to be, they're not built to be user friendly for navigating, hundreds or thousands of activities. So for the modern seller, this is a huge problem because, here's your new territory, here's your 100 accounts, and you go in and there's, tens of thousands of activities on each account. And you just, your eyes just glaze over. And this has become a huge problem for the seller. So we're about to release a new product that really digs at the heart of this problem. We structure that data, we identify the things that are important. We identify the tasks that the seller needs to take. We deliver those conversationally to the seller and we're through our pilots and our beta, we've seen a huge amount of success. We've seen people increase their productivity by 30-40%. So, we're really excited about that. We're calling it Intelligent Customer Management is that product.
Good. So that's an evolution from CRM. I think that stands for customer relationship management to intelligent management of the whole customer base.
That's kind of what we were thinking. We see this as a new category. There's salespeople need help managing this data and sifting through it.
Well, that gives us an opportunity, Will, to start speculating about the future, if you like. Imagining the future. We talk about that at Economics for Entrepreneurs. So I may have mentioned to you one of the references I keep returning to is that the future of AI is that everyone will have 100 smart digital assistants on their device screen, and they can talk to those assistants in a natural language interface, just like we talk to Siri or OK Google, and then direct them to execute tasks. So maybe in the future, I'll talk to my device and say, personalize my relationships with my top 100 customer prospects and intelligently manage that, or something like that. Is that consistent with where you're going, or do you imagine a different kind of future?
Yeah. So I think people have a tendency to underestimate what's possible in the short term overestimate what's possible in the short term and underestimate what's possible in the long term.
Yeah,
I remember a few years ago when I was in grad school, the Watson, IBM Watson team came and, you know, they played Jeopardy against our, we had some kind of trivia team that, that went up against Watson and, you know, got absolutely smashed by it. and everybody said, whoa, this is the future. You know, that was 6 years ago now, that occurred. And, you know, now I think what you're seeing is you're starting to see the Alexa crop up and, you know, the Google Home Assistant, and, you know, they can answer really, really cool questions. I asked a really complex question about Queen to the Google assistant in my parents' house the other day, and it just picked it up perfectly. It was like about the background of a particular member of the band, and it's really impressive. I think, you know, this is kind of a continuum of things that's been happening for a very long time. You know, ever since the first calculator, you know, we've been kind of augmenting what the human mind can do with what, you know, software and machinery is really, you know, built to do. And I think where we're going to see that really expand is in the amount of data that these systems take in. So the calculator, you know, five times five is all that it had. Today, you know, the Alexa, it has a lot of data, you know, just like your smartphone, it has access to the whole internet. But it doesn't know very much about you. It only knows what you're asking. So I think, you know, if you think about once these systems are, you know, tracking your life, you know, what about like a nutrition bot that can, you know, look through your eyes and see all the things in front of you, advise you on what to order off the menu at a restaurant. You know, I think once we get those data inputs into a really, advanced place, there's really no limit to, you know, what these systems can do. They'll never, you know, replace the person, because there's some things that, you know, the technology is nowhere near. But it certainly, there's things that we're not as good at where we can be augmented.
And given machine learning, Will, can the software learn as it goes about what the users or the customers are finding useful about that interchange and what they're not? And can it constantly refine itself that way? We get that impression, but is that realistic?
Yeah, I think, you know, the way these things layer is somewhat amazing. You know, an example in our business, you know, we take individual conversations and, you know, look for signals. So, hey, Hunter wrote me an email. I, you know, sent him a proposal last week. He said, you know, I don't have budget. And then he sent me an email that said, why don't we pick this up in 3 months? And, you know, as you can structure those, you know, those interactions, you know, that could be one model to interpret each of those individually. But then you could do another model, which is, you know, think of those as words in a larger sentence. And then I could compare Hunter across all these different customers. So there's kind of this layering effect where, you know, you can have neural nets processing outputs of different neural nets, and it can, you know, go on and on. There is another piece to it, though, which is today, it is, you know, there is a lot of business logic that's required, or just kind of logic. You need to wrap these models in. And so I think, you know, to get back to the point earlier about, you know, entrepreneurs using AI, there is a huge need for, you know, really good product people who can put boundaries around these technologies and guide them, and, you know, do a great job on interface and programming. But, you know, that being said, you know, I think the stuff we're going to see in our lifetimes, coming from AI is really going to, you know, change everything in our lives. I mean, truly.
Yes, it's an astonishing transition that we're going through. So help us here, Will, bring it back to the context of everyday entrepreneurs, as I like to say, and small business owners. We're thinking about the high street store owners and the landscape service providers and the CPAs and accountants and the small law officers and construction contractors, yeah, and so on, just everyday businesses. Do you believe that every one of them can, without too much difficulty, access artificial intelligence and improve their business performance and, as you help them to do, engage better with customers? Is it available to all of those? I mean, one way obviously is to engage services like Nova. But is it going to be generally a tool for those kinds of businesses?
Yeah, I absolutely think so. And I think where that will start in a lot of ways is you know, the way that people interact with data. You know, all those businesses, they have, you know, accounting where they basically go in and categorize transactions and, you know, clean the books and, you know, do all these things. And basically what they're doing is taking data from bank accounts and emails and, you know, places like that and, you know, tabulating it and categorizing it. And sounds like a really good opportunity for some models to make that a little more automated. And that's something that's already happening. Similar on the customer side, right? For all the reasons we've discussed about Nova and you know, other similar technologies. I think that, you know, there certainly everybody is going to become a consumer of AI powered products. Now, I think one thing about this, about AI is it's very, you know, it's very egalitarian. It's very, you know, anybody can really get access to it. And it doesn't have a high upfront cost. You know, these days there's, you know, it's not like the days where, you know, the best business opportunities were for, you know, the people who could drill for oil or build railroads, you know, which were very capital intensive. You can go today on, you know, Udemy or Coursera and take free courses on programming and machine learning. And, you know, the way the world's going, I think everybody, you know, regardless, doesn't matter if you're, you know, a psychiatrist, a, you know, work in construction, I think everybody would benefit from, you know, programming literacy. And I'm a huge advocate of that. I really think that, you know, as a country, you know, the best way that, you know, we can prepare ourselves for the future would be to more proactively support that and push people toward it.
Right. And in lots of different ways, as you say, whether it's coding camps or Udemy or however you access it. One piece of advice that I received, and maybe you can comment on it and maybe even amplify it, is that everyone should get a GitHub account, which is free, I think, at least at the entry level. And I also heard in that same reference that 85% or something like that of all the AI code that has ever been written is currently on GitHub and available to people. And it's expressed in different ways. It can help you in different ways. Would you tell our listeners a little bit about GitHub and how they might become familiar with it, even if they're not steeped in programming?
Yeah. I think, you know, with any new growing industry, there's these mediums and, you know, software is such a growing part of our lives and, you know, part of the professional world that, you know, GitHub is kind of, you know, where a lot of that action is. It's where people are talking about software. It's, you know, where, you know, you can look at publicly at the most popular projects and really get a bead. Even if you don't understand the code within them, you can at least understand where the energy is going in the industry and what people are doing. And the brilliance of GitHub is that they've centralized it and built, you know, a lightweight social network around it so that it can be something that you know, somebody who's not a lifetime programmer can access. I think, you know, whether you're just curious, whether you're an investor, whether you're, you know, somebody who's looking to get into the software industry, I think there can be a lot of benefit in being aware of that. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, I think everybody should have a fundamental programming education. So, you know, a huge step is you know, getting into GitHub and, you know, finding things that interest you.
Just to expand on that riff a little bit, Will, let's say I don't know anything about programming. I've never written a line of code. I go to GitHub. What might I look for? What might I say? I want to improve my business. I want to do better at accounting or something like that. How would I find something in GitHub that might help?
Yeah, I think you could certainly, you know, search on keywords. What I would do if I were in your shoes is I would go and I would just sort the repositories by commit volume, by, you know, the numbers of forks, which are all indicators of usage and growth. And, you know, even just go down that list. I think that could be very interesting. Now, a lot of the stuff at the top might be, you know, like big kind of Linux kernel stuff, or, you know, who knows, you know, something very industrial. But as you get down and you develop your filters, I think you can find a lot of, you know, interesting stuff there. And there's a lot of people, you know, now at this point, there's a lot of, you know, blogs and things like that that aggregate a lot of the interesting and fascinating activity off GitHub. So you can also look outside of the platform to really for directions on where the energy is focused and where you should be looking.
Yeah. Is there a GitHub group on Reddit, for example?
I mean, I would argue all of Reddit's one big GitHub group, you know?
Yeah. Right. Good. Well, the other thing that goes through my head all the time is that artificial intelligence is going to make us all feel more comfortable because all the data that we will be generating through the home automation hubs and apps that we have it'll make our heating and air conditioning and plumbing all the more responsive to our needs and better managed, and we'll all be more comfortable in the future. I mean, it's a pervasive kind of technology. That's what I think about.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I think oil's a good analog, right? You know, oil is, you know, it's added so much productivity to our lives. It's, you know, you can't imagine the world without it today. Well, now you could start to, but you know, only because other technologies have become so good, like electric storage and generation. But you know, there's the amazing things it can do. There's also you know, the things to avoid, you know, anytime you have these resources that are centrally controlled, there's danger, and so there needs to be, you know, responsibility in how those are managed and governed over time. But you know, I think, you know, what I hear a lot is, you know, about this and notion of the singularity and, you know, that AI is going to, you know, make humans extinct. I haven't read all the literature. I'll admit I haven't, you know, really heard that side out as much depth as, you know, would be needed to have a truly educated opinion on this. But where I sit, I don't see it. I think right now, you know, even in sales, you know, what we're doing in that technology, there's really a big difference between what a person can do and what these technologies, even very advanced technologies, can do. They're very good at summarizing a lot of data and, you know, providing very light, you know, insights, which can be tremendously valuable. But, you know, there's no replacement today for an enterprise sales rep. And there's a lot that goes into what they do and the way they interact with customers. So we'll see, you know.
Right. Yeah, we like to think of AI here as the augmented individual. It gives us all more capacity and more ability to perform and more opportunity. And you know, we're optimists.
Yeah. No, I think you got to be an optimist, right? I was listening to, you know, Elon Musk recently on a podcast, and somebody asked him, are you an optimist? And he said, yeah, because, you know, let's say the bad thing happens. Like, are you going to be, you know, what's a better life, to sit there dreading it and then it happens, or to, you know, be optimistic and then it happens? So I don't think the bad thing or bad things, you know, on that global scale are going to happen, but I think there's all the reason in the world to be optimistic.
We'll be optimists together. So, Will, thanks very much today. Where should people go to find out about Nova.ai?
You just said it. That's our domain, www.nova.ai. You can learn more about our personalization product there. You can learn more about the new intelligent customer management, or ICM. And feel free, if you want to chat with us, fill out the form. We'd love to talk to you. So Hunter, thank you so much for having me. This has been a lot of fun, and just really appreciate it.
Well, good. Thanks very much for your time, Will, and thanks to everybody for listening. That's it for today at Economics for Entrepreneurs. Thank you.
Economics for Entrepreneurs is a production of the Mises Institute. To explore more content like this, visit Mises.org. That's Mises.org. For more from Hunter Hastings, check out HunterHastings.com.